This is On the Media. I'm Bob Garfield.
And I'm Brooke Gladstone. There's a saying from the early days of newspapers that goes, everyone gets to be in the paper twice, when they're born and when they die. The second part, the obituary, is, many think, a dying beat, specifically the obituary of people who otherwise wouldn't make the news. Jim Sheeler, a former reporter for the now-defunct Rocky Mountain News in Denver, won a Pulitzer for his piece about a Marine major who helped families of soldiers killed in Iraq cope with their loss. But before that, Sheeler was an obit writer. Jim, welcome to the show.
Thanks so much for inviting me.
You say that obituaries written about everyday people are on the decline. Why is that?
Part of it is just the decline in space in the newspapers, and also that newspapers have seen obituaries as sort of a cash cow. The vast majority of obituary pages these days are paid family obits, and they're quite expensive.
It seems to be one kind of classified ad that Craigslist can't raid.
Exactly. Newspapers also charge to keep the obituary online. So you have to keep paying every year to have the guest book continue. So for families that can't afford obituaries, the kind that I wrote about mostly, those names might not show up in the paper at all.
And it seems that many regular people are either consciously or unconsciously writing their own obituaries through their social media. What can an obituary writer do that people aren't doing for themselves?
Well, there are some really fantastic self-written obituaries and family-written obituaries. But to get a sense of who that person was by looking through their scrapbooks and family stories and distilling that down into a real story that's not just interesting for the other family members, but to tell the readers why this life was important. One thing I always ask the family members is, what did you learn from this person's life? What can I learn from this life? What can I take away from it and maybe add to my own? How can I make myself better? One of the things I've said is that if journalism is a subsidized education, obituary writing is the philosophy beat. You know, it's where we learn about life and death and what makes up all of us.
But isn't it true that in many newspapers, the obit beat was regarded as the beat of last resort for fading journalists?
In many ways, it was. It was often referred to as the Siberia of the newsroom. I've saw journalists at my own newspaper punished. Obits for you for the next 6 months. But when I started writing them, I actually realized what a joy they can be to write. One of the first obituaries that came across my desk from the funeral home, that was in the days when they would just give you a little bit of information about the person, and it said, she was a florist and a butcher. And I was just like, I would have loved to have written this story as a profile. And then I realized, well, actually, I still can. That's the great thing about these obituaries is they're the last chance to tell this person's story. And there's a lot of pressure in that, but there's also a lot of reward. I would receive hugs after interviewing the families because they were so thankful. It's really cathartic for them. Now, we're so sort of scared about talking about death that a lot of people don't know what to say, and so they don't say anything at all. I was sitting with a man who had lost his wife to breast cancer. She was 44 years old. I had asked him that question about, what did you learn from her? And he recounted this story of how not long after she had been diagnosed, she was reading the newspaper. There was some inane story on the front page about politicians squabbling about some stupid issue. And this was right after she had been diagnosed. So she throws down the newspaper and she points at it and she says, you know, these people need cancer. Not enough to kill them, but just enough to make them realize what's important in life. And then he looked at me and he said, you know, Jim, it's not that there's too much cancer in the world. It's just that it's poorly distributed. You know, it's just absolute genius, you know, and it's not something that you would find by just calling somebody on the telephone. And that's something else about, you know, these obituaries. They take time. I did almost all of my interviews in person. With today's newspapers, where you're having to write several stories and live tweet and multitask so many ways, there isn't always the time to sit back and listen to the stories that mean the most, the stories that last.
Your Pulitzer Prize winning piece, Final Salute, about the Marine that helped families cope with the loss of loved ones in Iraq. Do you think you could have done that without all those years on the obit beat?
Absolutely not. You know, I learned so much about talking to families, being there, knowing when to shut up and when to let them grieve and when to listen and how to listen.
What do you mean, how to listen?
People leave behind stories, and these stories will tell the obituary for you sometimes. One of the primary people in the story is Catherine Cathy, who is a 23-year-old pregnant war widow who I met just a couple of days after her husband was killed. When we were talking, she mentioned that she had taken up knitting when Jim was away at Marine Training Corps. I asked to see some of the things she had knit, and she took out this baby blanket and she told me its story, which was that the night before Jim left for Iraq, he knew that he wouldn't be back in time to see the baby born. So he slept with that baby blanket because he said that when the child was born, he wanted the baby to know how his father smelled. And that was the lead of my story the next day. The soft blue-green baby blanket still smells like Second Lieutenant James J. Cathy. I mean, that's so different than the standard, you know, news story. Writing obituaries taught me how to look for those stories in places like a baby blanket.
One more example of precisely that. You took the shortest obit in the paper and you reported it out. Johnny Richardson.
Just said basically that Johnny Richardson had died. He enjoyed listening to jazz. There are no survivors. When you have no survivors, they basically take things that might mean something. They put them in a box in the public administrator's office. And so I went down to the public administrator's office and I found all of his belongings basically fit in a box the size of a shoebox. And I started reporting from letters and things that he had left behind. He had shined shoes at the Denver International Airport for decades. You know, for the people who knew him, whether it was the people he shined shoes for at the airport or in the salons downtown, he was this really special, quiet but thoughtful guy. He did leave an impact. In the salon where he ended up working downtown, you know, they left a memorial on his shoeshine seat. And here he was about to go completely unrecognized and without a grave marker at all.
So he had an impact. Did your work have an impact?
Yeah. After the story ran, they raised enough money to actually buy him a headstone. And when I go to Denver, a lot of times I'll say hi to Johnny in the cemetery.
Most of us are not famous. Most of us just pass through. And that's the coverage that is disappearing with the obituary of the regular person. Since we're such a narrative-driven form these days, why can't we keep this going?
There are still reporters who are out there doing this. Andy Meekum at the Tampa Bay Times is one of the best obituary writers writing today, and he does many of these. He calls them epilogue. The problem is that it does take so much time to sit with these families and listen for the stories. They don't always come out in the very beginning. You know, you have to jump through a lot of cliches. You know, people will say, you know, he would have given the shirt off his back to help somebody. And, you know, I always would challenge them, well, did you ever see him give the shirt off his back to help somebody? And at one point, though, one woman said, well, actually, I did see her one time we were walking along and she took off her shoes and gave them to a homeless person. And so that's the beauty of these obituaries is they're not the cliches or the eulogies, they're the stories. I mean, we're all made up of stories. And trying to find those last stories is one of the most important jobs in the newspaper. I think that because of the time it takes and the money it makes to not do them, that's one reason they're fading away.
So, Jim, we're going to do an obit of someone who hasn't had one written about him or her. Do you have any pointers about how to go about it?
You know, I would just call up and say, I just read this small little thing that the funeral home sent out about your loved one, and I know there's a much bigger story there. Would you have time for me to come and just look through some scrapbooks and tell some stories? And almost inevitably, they would say yes. A few would say no, and I'd never pressed it because I've made it clear that I was going to tell the whole story. Mm-hmm. I did stories about people who were jerks and whose family members admitted it, but that made them who they were, and it made those stories really wonderful. you notice a lot of things when you're scanning the obituary pages every day.
Mm-hmm.
The husband that dies hours or days after his wife.
Mm-hmm.
Some amazing love stories on the obituary page.
Well, that sends us on our way. Jim, thank you so much.
Oh, thank you so much.
Jim Sheeler is a Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist and now a journalism professor at Case Western University in Cleveland.
Good luck with the obit.